Well, good evening. It's good to see everybody. It's nice to be back again to be with you and to be able to come and share the word with you. This evening, we'll be talking about this question, what is in the dragnet? So if you will, open up in your Bibles to Matthew chapter 13. Matthew chapter 13, verses 47 through 50. Now, growing up, we used to go and spend time at my grandfather's place. I would get to go a couple times every summer. And during that time, Grandpa always managed to make that the week he would go and fish for his catfish, for his year's supply of that. But before he'd actually fish for the catfish, he would take a bait trap. And he would put some frozen corn in that, and he would go and put it in the water next to the bank, and he'd leave it for a day, day and a half. And then after he was done with that, he would pull it out, and he'd bring me along to help him with that. And in it would be the fish he's looking for, the little bait fish, so he could catch these catfish that are used to eating these little bait fish. But in that trap would also be the larger fish he didn't want that were in there to get at the bait fish, and his least favorite animal in the pond, the turtles. You always find some turtles in that trap, also going after said little fish. So he would open up that trap, and he'd get all the big fish he didn't want and throw those back in the pond. And then he would have me get all the turtles out of the trap and go put them on the side of the bank to be dealt with later. And then he would go and set his trap line up with all these little bait fish and come back a couple days later, and we'd have fresh catfish ready to go. But after he's setting up that trout line, he would go over to the turtles and he would deal with them accordingly with a hatchet. Except for the one or two that I was able to spare and bring home to cause mother her own headaches and stress later on. Now, I say that story because it fits very well with the parable that's given here in Matthew chapter 13. And it's one that I kind of had forgot about myself for the most part. It's only mentioned here and it's got a simple, pretty clear understanding, but there's an important lesson I think we can take from it tonight. So Matthew chapter 13, verses 47 to 50, it says again, "The kingdom of heaven is like a dragnet, cast into the sea, and gathering fish of every kind. And when it was filled, they drew it up on the beach, and sat down and gathered the good fish into containers, and the bad were thrown away." Pretty similar to what would happen with my grandfather. Verse 49, "So it will be at the end of the age. The angels will come forth, and take out the wicked from among the righteous, and will throw them into the furnace of fire. In that place, there will be a weeping and gnashing of teeth." Well, tonight I want to talk about, as it says, what is in the dragnet. It's quite easy to understand. It says, at the end of age, the angels will come and will gather up all men in the world. And then they will be looked at to see what is considered good and what is considered unprofitable. What is something they don't want to be pulling in the net? So the questions we're going to look at tonight is, what do I want to be like? And what do I not want to be like? So we're going to start with the not-bees. We're going to look at a few of these. So we started with turtles and said Grandpa hated turtles. Let's not be like a snapping turtle who is quick to bite and has a short temper. If you will, turn over to Galatians chapter 5. Galatians chapter 5 and verse 15. Galatians 5:15 reads, "But if you bite and devour one another, take care that you are not consumed by one another." Snapping turtles are not known for their patience. They are known to be quick to bite and have pretty fast reflexes. And that nasty jaw you see bites down quick and will not let go. Alyssa's quite familiar with them, as she has had some run-ins with them in Alabama. That's why she herself does not like turtles. In fact, when she was a little girl, she tried to help one cross the road. And it bit at her, did not get her, luckily. But it scared her. And it understood that this turtle was saying, "Don't mess with me. I want to be left alone. I have a short temper. I'm quick to bite, and I don't let go easily." If we are acting this way for ourselves, amongst one another, we're quick to bite with a short temper, we're going to run off. Those of us who are trying to help one another, help each other cross the road, metaphorically speaking. When I think of a snapping turtle, though, I also think of Cain. Of how Cain had a short temper and a short fuse when it came to giving his sacrifice back to God. we should be pretty familiar with that story of how after God rejects his sacrifice, he turns and snaps, bites on his brother, and it costs him everything. It costs him his family, his parents, his brother. Cost him his relationship with God because he was quick to bite and had that short temper. Let's make sure we're not like the snapping turtle who's quick to bite. Let's also be sure not to be like the jellyfish who has no backbone and is easily persuaded. One page over, at least in my Bible, Galatians chapter 2. Galatians chapter 2 and verse 11. The reason when Cephas came to Antioch, I opposed him to his face, because he stood condemned. For prior to the coming of certain men from James, he used to eat with the Galatians and the Gentiles. But when they came, he began to withdraw and hold himself aloof, fearing the party of the circumcision. The rest of the Jews joined him in hypocrisy, with the result that even Barnabas was carried away by their hypocrisy. Jellyfish have no backbone. You see that blob? That's just their sack. It's a fluid sack. And they just go where the current takes them. And they're pretty happy just to go about life. They're easily persuaded by the currents. But there's something else about a jellyfish here that you also see in this section in Galatians. See those white tendrils sticking off? Not the big red ones, but the little white ones? Those are stingers. And they're full of a highly concentrated, highly potent poison. If you've never been stung by a jellyfish, it hurts a lot. And there's not many remedies to get rid of it. Unfortunately, Peter here has that little bit of poison seep in. In this, in the narrative here, this memory that Paul is giving, you see Peter's the poison of his hypocrisy, him not having a backbone. It's coming. It's not just affected him, but it's affected everybody else, all of the rest of the Jews that are there in Galatia, that would, until the rest of the Jews from Jerusalem are coming up, would have companionship with the Gentiles. It was normal for them. And even Barnabas, who was supposed to be Paul's right-hand man for so long, became corrupted and poisoned by this hypocrisy, by Peter not having a backbone. When we don't have a backbone, we can easily hurt and bend others around with us. Let's be careful and wary of the poison that comes from being a jellyfish. Let's also not be like the clownfish, who is easily frightened and runs away to hide quickly. 2 Timothy chapter 1 and verse 7. It reads, "For God has not given us a spirit of timidity, but of power and love and discipline." Most of us, I think, should be familiar with the movie Finding Nemo. You remember Marlin, the father clownfish, after his interaction with the barracuda, becomes quite easily frightened. And he's always quick to run and hide in the anemone that's around and causes his little boy Nemo to have that same nature of timidity for a long time. But Nemo doesn't want to be that way. But when we're easily frightened by things, we run. We hide quickly. We let fear consume us. And it turns us into something that we shouldn't be. When I think of the clownfish, I think of the story of Elijah and Jezebel. After he has gone and cleaned house for Israel, gotten rid of the 450 prophets of Baal, you'd think that'd be a high point in his life. But he hears through the grapevine of Jezebel saying, "First chance I get, Elijah's head's going to be on my stake." So what does he do? He runs and he goes so far south, all the way to Mount Horeb. Hundreds of miles, about 100 I think-ish, miles south to hide from her. Because he became so easily frightened when just a few days prior he had the power of God behind him. And he had the entire nation behind him, standing with him saying, "God, Jehovah God needs to be the God of Israel. Let us not be easily frightened like Elijah or the clownfish. Let us also not be like the largemouth bass." You think this is a good fish. This is one of the famous sport fish. Everyone enjoys these fish, but they're called largemouth for a reason. Let us not have a big mouth or be malicious gossips like the largemouth bass. Titus chapter 2, in verse 3, reads, "Older women likewise are to be reverent in their behavior, not malicious gossips, nor enslaved to much wine, teaching what is good." This section, while it says older women are to teach here, this section really does apply to everybody. It's not just a specific to them. This is a section of full encouragement to the older men, to the younger men, to the older ladies, to the younger ladies. But largemouth bass have that, well, as you say, have a big mouth. They're known to be able to eat things that are much larger than their own head because they can unhinge that jaw and have a large vacuum there. Big mouths, most of us have probably felt the effects of having a big mouth in our life. Either our own mouth as it's got us into trouble before, or someone's being a malicious gossip comes in and will ruin your reputation with just a few simple words. I think many of us have had that happen in our lives. Someone has come in maliciously attacking our reputation, who we are, and the time it takes to rebuild that relationship and that respect from so many of our peers and other people in the world, it's quite easy to start a large wildfire with just a little spark. Be wary of being the largemouth bass. When I think of a largemouth bass, I think of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram. The three men who came and stood opposed to Moses and Aaron saying, "Who are you? Who are you to think that, or to come and proclaim that you are God's emissaries only? Well, aren't we also men of Levi? Don't we also have the right to be potential priests? Why do you get to rule?" They let their big mouths get the best of them, and it cost them everything. Their families, their servants, their homes, all of their wealth was all eaten and devoured by the earth itself, as the Lord made that be the consequence for them being men of big mouths and of purposely tearing down God's emissaries. Let's not be like the largemouth bass. Let's also not be like a pufferfish. Look at James chapter 4. James chapter 4 talks about pride. The pufferfish becomes puffed up with pride. James chapter 4, verses 6 through 9. It says, "But he gives a greater grace. Therefore it says, God is opposed to the proud, but gives grace to the humble. Submit therefore to God. Resist the devil, and he will flee from you. Draw near to God, and he will draw near to you. Cleanse your hands, you sinners, and purify you hearts, you double-minded. Be miserable and mourn the weep. Let your laughter be turned into mourning and your joy to gloom. But humble yourselves in the presence of the Lord, and he will exalt you." Pufferfish puff up because they're trying not to be, someone's dinner. And they do it as a defensive mechanism. And those little spikes also carry about a lot of poison in them. If they somehow do manage to get swallowed, they'll puff up in the throat of, say, a shark. And those little thorns will tear up the throat and also inject a lot of poison. But we always laugh and talk about pufferfish just being puffed up. When they become so full of themselves, full of water at this point, they can't move really at all. And they become a nuisance. That's what happens when we let our pride become so puffed up that we won't let anyone come near us. When our egos get so big that it becomes a poison to those around us. They want to come out and have a relationship with you, but you say, "Nope, you can't get near me." Or, "No, my opinions, my thoughts, they're pristine. They're right. I can't be wrong." We don't let people come in and help us and correct us. Puffed up with pride, again, poison will begin to seep out and ruin these relationships that we have. Don't be like the pufferfish who is so puffed up with pride. Let's also not be like a catfish. These make good eating. We all know and enjoy, I think, good fried catfish. But the catfish that we normally eat, it's not wild catfish. You don't want to eat wild catfish because they're bottom feeders. Wild catfish eat garbage. They'll eat all sorts of things, whatever they can find. And it's not good. Look, if you will, at 2 Peter chapter 2 in verse 19. It says, "Promising them freedom, while they themselves are slaves of corruption. For by what a man is overcome, by this he is enslaved. For if after they have escaped the defilements of the world, by the knowledge of the Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, they are again entangled in them, and are overcome to the last state, and has become worse for them than the first. For it would have been better for them not to have known the way of righteousness, than having known it, to turn away from the holy commandment handed on to them. It has happened to them according to the true proverb, a dog returns to its own vomit, and a sow after washing returns to wallow in the mire. Catfish eat what has been rejected by the rest of the pond, for the most part. They'll eat some fresh things too, but it's whatever's on the bottom, also eating garbage. That's what they are eating and consuming, again, for the most part. We need to be wary that we are not becoming the bottom feeders of the world, ingesting and taking in what the world is throwing away and is saying is not fruitful for us. Isn't that really what most of the entertainment industry now has become? Garbage. It's not really good for us to take in all of the things that the world is saying is good. And when they throw away to the side, we're just there, right there to ingest it as well. When I think of a catfish, of bottom feeders, of taking in the evils of the world, I think of Manasseh, whose father, Hezekiah, was an amazing king, turned the nation completely around, brought it back to God. He was set up to have an amazing godly dynasty. But it says the first thing Manasseh did when he became king was he brought in all of the old gods, brought them back in and set them back up in the temple of God, and ruined for 55 years the nation of Judah by letting all of the garbage of the world come into the nation. Don't be a bottom feeder. Don't let the garbage come into our lives and that's all we're eating on. Don't be a bottom feeder. And lastly, of the do nots, don't be like a goldfish, who are pretty on the outside, yet carry no substance. Luke chapter 12. Luke chapter 12, the first three verses. It says, under these circumstances, after so many thousands of people had gathered together, that they were stepping on one another, he began saying to the disciples, first of all, beware the leaven of the Pharisees, which is hypocrisy. But there is nothing covered up that will not be revealed, and hidden that will not be known. Accordingly, whatever you have said in the dark will be heard in the light, and what you have whispered in the inner rooms will be proclaimed upon the housetops. Goldfish make excellent pets. They are great in a little bowl, but when you try to put them in the wild, they become useless. In fact, a danger to the environment, because they have no stopping mechanism. All they know to do is to eat and grow, and eat and grow. If you take a little goldfish and put it into a pond, it will quickly grow to a large size and disrupt the entire environment, because there's nothing else for it to do. There's no predators for it. It's a pretty fish. They are beautiful. I think that's why we are so attracted to them. They set up and make our aquariums look beautiful. But like it says the leaven of the Pharisees, there's no real substance to them and to their nature. They are really brainless and mindless animals. When I think of, unfortunately, of the goldfish, and that pretty on the outside, it makes me think of Rachel, Jacob's second wife. And the Bible, the only positive thing it says about her was, she was beautiful in figure and form. She is pretty on the outside, but if you do a hard, good study on Rachel, you see that she was a lady of no substance. All she was pretty on the outside. She had a rotten core on the inside. There was nothing to her but sadness and sorrow and spite. Let's be wary not to be like a goldfish, pretty and decorated on the outside, but when you get to the heart of us, there's no substance. There's no real life to us anymore. There are a lot of fish and animals not to be like. But there, I think there's three that we should really focus on and think about and we should be like. The first is this. Let's be a flashlight fish and shine our Christian lights. Philippians chapter 2. Philippians chapter 2, verses 14 to 15. It says, "Do all things without grumbling or disputing, so that you will prove yourselves to be blameless and innocent children of God, above reproach in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation, among whom you appear as lights unto the world." When you look at that little flashlight fish, you see those white, that little white sack under its eyes? That is a phosphorescent sack. That means when it wants, it'll light up and glow. Because these little flashlight fish, they only hunt and move at night. They hide among the reefs and the coral during the day, but at night, they come out and in their schools, and they use those to communicate with each other. They'll turn them on and off to talk, and they'll turn them on so they can see, so they can hunt. Turn them off when there's a predator nearby so they can quickly go and hide. These flashlight fish, I said, they talk with those lights. The ocean is dark at night. As Paul is talking to them saying, appear as lights into the world. That light, when other fish see it, no, it's safe. That area is a safe place to be. I can see around the flashlight fish. I know that it's safe because it hasn't turned it off and ran away. There's no predators nearby. People of the world, when they see our light shining, when it's not being busheled and hidden by all the darkness in the world, they know it is. We are a safe place to be. We're a good people to come and be around. We should be joyful, sharing all of the goodness that comes about from having this special relationship with God. We are a safe and wonderful place to be around, a wonderful people to be. Make sure we're shining our Christian lights like the flashlight fish. But let us also be like a salmon. Let us also be like a salmon, because salmon remember where they come from. A few verses over in chapter 3 of Philippians, starting in verse 12, it reads, "Not that I have already obtained it, or have already become perfect, but I press on, so that I may lay hold of that for which I was also laid hold of by Christ Jesus. Brethren, I do not regard myself as having laid hold of it yet, but one thing I do, forgetting what lies behind, and reaching forward to what lies ahead, I press on toward the goal of the prize for the upward call of God in Christ Jesus." Salmon have a really strange power. Salmon have this magnetic memory so that they know exactly where they came from when they were born. And they know exactly from that where to go to lay their eggs to start the next generation. They will always return to the same pond or river that they came from. No matter how far they travel in the ocean, no matter where they go in the world, they will always come back home. They always remember where they came from. We must remember that. We must remember where we come from. We come from heaven. We come from God and His loving embrace. And that's where we need and want to end up. Right? So we should want, that's our goal in life, is to get back to Him and to get back to His embrace, like the salmon returning home. When I think of a salmon, I think of Daniel in Babylon. After he's been ripped from his home and taken to a brand new nation, a place where he doesn't speak the language, where he doesn't know the customs, where he can be a whole brand new man, what does he do? What does he do with his life? He goes and gives it back to God. He makes sure that no matter what, he is not compromising who he is, what he knows he's supposed to be doing in his life, because he's a member of Judah. He's a part of God's chosen people. He remembers where he came from and doesn't let the future, or the possible future, come in and change that fact. And he sets up himself as a wonderful example for him, for his friends, and for Nebuchadnezzar, and it turns out later for the kingdom. As Nebuchadnezzar comes in and begins to recognize Jehovah God is God and can do some mighty and powerful things. Daniel was like a salmon, remembered where he came from. Let's make sure we do the same. And the last fish of the evening, I know I've heard a lot of fish, the last one here is, let's be like the marlin, who fight with zeal. 1 Peter chapter 5, verses 8 and 9. 1 Peter 5, verses 8 and 9. Be of sober spirit. Be on the alert, because your adversary the devil prowls around like a roaring lion, seeking someone to devour. But resist him, firm in your faith, knowing that the same experiences of suffering are being accomplished by your brethren who are in the world. Marlin are called the king of the sports fish world. If you want the greatest challenge, you don't go for largemouth bass. You don't go fishing for catfish. You go to the deep sea and go for these marlin. These beautiful fish can weigh up to 1,000 pounds, be 9.5 feet long, so it's probably about there at the end of the stage. And when you get one of these things on the line, you have to buckle yourself into a chair, buckle your rod to you and the chair, and then get ready. Because you're fighting this fish for 4 up to 10 hours before it is exhausted enough for somebody else to come and pick it up and put it into the boat. These are a challenge. And they put up a fight because they don't want to be caught. This section, what Paul is encouraging us here to do, is when Satan begins the hunt and makes you the target for the day, you put up a fight. You put up zeal. You stand firm. You make it to where if Satan does get you on the line, he regrets it. If you happen to fall prey to his tricks, his schemes, his temptations, you're going to fight and make him regret getting you on the line. And if you end up succumbing to that temptation, the goal of the marlin, the fight, is to make it so that the fisherman, in this case Satan, is too exhausted to go after someone else in the school. And he has to leave for a time and recover himself before he can come back and try again for someone else. Marlins put up a huge fight. When I think of a marlin, I think of Stephen. I think of Stephen in Acts chapter 7. As he has been blessed by the Holy Spirit to have knowledge and the ability to speak, he's in the synagogues teaching, discoursing with the Jews, in arguments with the Sadducees, the Pharisees, and they don't like it. They bring him before the Sanhedrin. He preaches a very strong and poignant sermon to them. And what do? They end up plugging their hands in their ears, bringing him outside the city and stoning him. Because Stephen put up fight and put up a zeal for Christ. And as Stephen lays there on the ground, on the edge of death, he looks up into heaven. And he sees Jesus standing next to the throne, looking down on him with joy in his eyes, knowing that Stephen put up the fight and carried the zeal in his life. Stephen was like the marlin. The reason I wanted to bring this lesson and to talk about this tonight is, again, brought back in the parable way back in Matthew chapter 13. And it's in verse 49 again. So that it will be at the end of the age, the angels will come forth and take out the wicked from among the righteous, and they will throw them into a furnace of fire. In that place there will be a weeping and gnashing of teeth. When it's all said and done, the oceans of the world, that is, everyone, will be drawn into the net. The seas will be emptied, and it'll all be laid before or on the beach. And the angels will come in and see, this is a good fish. This is a good fish. This is a good fish. And they will take those good ones, and they will come and lay them on the Lord's table and say, this is what you're looking for. These are the people you are seeking to spend eternity with, to share your bounty. Then they'll look at all that's left. All the little goldfish, all of the pufferfish, the catfish, the snapping turtles that have ended up in the nets. And then take all of those
thrown into a place of pain, of misery, sadness, death. Let us not be like any of those. Carry those characteristics that are going to end us up in a place where we don't want to be. So I call for us tonight. If there's anybody who needs to be saved, who needs to know that I am going to end up on the Lord's table of bounty, come forward now. Please stand as we sing.